Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, September 7, 2021. A Catholic priest in Western Equatorial State says five people were killed in Tombora on Monday.
Houses are being burned, people are being slaughtered, dying in cold blood. These are civilians, innocent civilians dying.
And the transitional government of national unity promises to provide security to truck drivers along the Juba-Nimule highway.
Our discussion has been very clear that the government has fully deployed the unit that will provide escort from Nimule to Juba. And all other matters that were hindering the coming of the trucks are also considered by the government.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations mission in South Sudan is calling on national and local leaders to resolve tensions in Tombora after fresh fighting broke out on Monday between armed groups. The United Nations mission in South Sudan is urging leaders of the country to reconcile communities who are fighting each other to avoid loss of life. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan is calling on national and local leaders to quickly resolve tensions in Tombora and the wider Western Equatorial region after a fresh outbreak of fighting occurred between armed groups on Monday. Tombora has been the scene of repeated attacks over the past 4 months, forcing people to flee their homes. According to enemies, heavy fighting erupted in Tombora town allegedly between the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, Stroke Army in opposition, and the South Sudan People's Defense Forces, or SSPDF, loyal to General James Nando. Major General Lulurai Kong is spokesperson for the SSPDF.
It is true there was a clash between some elements from SPLA-IO that came all the way from Namatina to attack forces led by James Nando. James Nando was an officer in SPLA-IO, but he defected to the government last year. That was not a clash between the two armies. It was a clash between some elements from both sides.
Major General Lam Gabriel, the spokesperson for the SPLM-IO, staunchly denies the allegations.
The clashes of yesterday were not with the SPLA-IO, and the clashes of yesterday happened between the forces of Nando and the chief. The forces loyal to the chief and the youth leader of Tombora, not the
SPLA-IO. Reports surfaced yesterday of sporadic shooting between groups in Tombora, endangering the lives of civilians, creating the risk of further displacement and increasing humanitarian needs, according to an army statement released today. In the statement, army chief Nicholas Haysom urged the parties engaged in the conflict to end the fighting so security could be restored. Haysom says it is, quote, vital that political leaders and the national and local level take urgent action to resolve tensions and bring communities together to avoid further loss of life, homes, and livelihoods, end quote. Gabriel tells South Sudan in Focus, the Joint Defense Board, the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, and SSPDF sent a joint team to Tombora to resolve the conflict.
Our leadership have dispatched a team to Yambio to make sure that our forces are moved out of Tombora to be taken to square cantonment site and possibly also to the training center. So the forces that are also loyal to General Nando will also be moved away from Tombora and will be taken to the SSPDF General Headquarters in Baridi so that at least we leave the situation in the hands of communities. Because at the moment, we know it is a civilian violence, but just because the presence of the SPLA-IO and SSPDF in the area is blaming the situation to become more political.
Enemy's boss, Haysom, says the fighting has increased humanitarian demands and that aid workers in the area are finding themselves caught in crossfire while trying to carry out critical tasks. He called on authorities to do more to ensure that humanitarians have safe and unhindered access to people in need. Western Equatoria State Information Minister William Adriano Baiki dismissed claims that the conflict in Tambora is between two ethnic communities in the area.
Other people may interpret as a conflict between Zande and the Balanda, but currently what I can confirm is that the person who is fighting now in Tambora, this is Nando and Angelo Davide. Nando is a Zande, Angelo Davide is a Zande. So it is very contradicting to say that it is a fighting between Balanda and Zande.
Baiki insists the two communities have always lived peacefully together.
Zande and Balanda, they have been living in Tambora in a very peaceful coexistence for centuries. So there was never anything to do with the fighting between Balanda and Zande.
Kwang says the delegation sent to Yambio yesterday is now in Tambora and working on relocating all organized forces in Tambora to Maridi Training Center, where he says they shall receive additional training as well as gain trust and confidence building so that the forces stop fighting each other. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
Still on the fighting in Tambora, a Catholic priest who has relocated to a UN base in Tambora for fear of his life says five people were killed on Monday during fighting within Tambora town. The parish priest of Tambora, Father Emmanuel Bey Bafu, says many families are sheltering at the UN camp in Tambora. Bafu says thousands of residents of Tambora have been displaced by fighting between armed groups in the area.
Houses are being burned, people are being slaughtered, dying in cold blood. These are civilians, innocent civilians, dying. And now threats started again against the church people, some key elements of the people in Tambora. So that is what made me take from the parish and then came to the enemy's camp here. And the reason as to why I left the parish was some three people who came pleading with me. The third one was crying, shedding tears, telling me, "Father, I value your life and I value how you preach. I value how you live among us. I don't want you to die. So the people in the bush are trying to kill you tonight, so just escape." Then I called the enemies who came to rescue me from that. That's why I'm in the IDP. And as I'm here, I don't move out. I just stay in the compound and rotate just in the compound. I also pray with the people on the compound.
There was heavy fighting in Tambora on Monday. Which groups are responsible for these clashes?
I was in the enemy's camp. We only started hearing gunshots from closer. And as the gunshots started, we didn't know what was happening. And we don't know who started the gunshot. We only later heard that there was an attack on the force of the ground. And I was asking myself, even the spray bullets also injured some civilians yesterday in IDP camp. Imagine, there were three bullets into the camp of the people which injured three people. But who was fighting who, we cannot tell. Because the security organs may really tell who are the ones fighting. But the insecurity in Tambora is strange. As I talk to you, there is no single civilian who is in his or her own home.
You are the parish priest in Tambora and you know your parishioners very well. How come you don't know who is fighting in the town?
Okay, to be sincere to you, my being in the enemies here is because of the threat. When in this South Sudan or this situation in which I am now, if I tell you this is the group, tonight or today, they will come for me. So that's why we have to be very diplomatic. I cannot tell you this is the group. What we know is fighting is happening and Tambora is in hell. I will never tell you that this is the group and this is what is happening. Whenever you speak the truth, those who are against the truth will definitely plan you to assassinate you. That is the challenge we are facing in Tambora. That's why, really, you may not get from me today that this is the group. But what I know is the attack was in the town, not even in the bush. Even some dead bodies that I saw yesterday was just at the roundabout in the middle of the town.
How many people were killed in the fighting on Monday?
I saw like five dead bodies yesterday with my own eyes. And one was over an Arab.
An Arab from which country?
I don't know. They were saying that was a Seleka man. I don't know who are the Seleka, but that is what I saw.
The rebels of Seleka are found in Central African Republic. What is the proof that this particular individual who was killed there is a Seleka fighter?
I don't know. This is what we were wondering yesterday. So this is the situation we have in Tambora. And really, the situation is worse.
Where is the government of Western Equatorial State in the backdrop of this violence?
The government of Tombora is within Tombora. And actually, I may not tell because myself, I saw the dead body simply because it was just like 7 meters away from where I am staying. Because the fighting was just near us, where in the enemy's base, so it was not far away. That's why I was able to pick. I even didn't reach where the dead bodies were, but I stood from far to see the bodies down there because they were on the flood there on the main road. So the government is there. We have the government in Tombora. The commissioner is here. We have also other government arms are here. We have the National Security Operation. We have the National Security Administration. And we have SSPDF forces here. They are here. But the town is deserted.
What is the Catholic Church doing to bring peace in Tombora?
In the first place, the church has struggled. Like last year, when this violence started up to this year, we formed a group of which I was the chairman for the peace program. And we were talking with all different groups around, seeing young people, women, elderly people, the traditional leaders, the government, in order to bring peace, to talk about reconciliation, talk about forgiveness and all this. But this has pollinated the fear of all these different groups. So we, as a church, we tried. And that's why we're giving security officers. We welcome the people to the church so that they can come and we give them shelter and also some hope. And that is why I am here. In the enemy's camp where I am, many people who are in the church followed me to the enemy and we are here with them. And the language is, once I leave, they leave. Then I said, since they are my faithful Christians and they are my people, let me stay with them. And it is not only me, even the pastor of Pentecostal Church, they burnt his houses down.
How many people are sheltering at the UN base in Tombora?
In the enemy's camp, where I am living, there are 2,889 people living here.
How are the IDPs surviving? Are there any aid agencies giving support?
Surely we want to thank the enemy for their support. They are not giving us food, but what they are providing is security. So they are able to at least escort people on the just on the perimeter up to 10 meters outside so that they are able to fetch firewood, they are able to fetch water, they are also able to fetch some green vegetables like pumpkin leaves, cassava leaves within so that they are able to sustain their life. And those who are within the camps who have their shops with food, the enemies are able to escort them to open the shop so that people can buy something to eat. So this is the protection they are giving us, and that's why we are able to survive here.
That's Father Emmanuel Bie Bafu, parish priest of Tombora Catholic Church. He was speaking with me from Tombora earlier today. The South Sudan government says it is deploying a joint force of police and national security services to escort cargo trucks and other vehicles traveling along the Juba-Nimule highway after truck drivers stopped transporting goods to South Sudan to protest the killing of their colleague on the highway. The truckers' strike has prompted commodity shortages and price hikes in Juba. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from the capital, Juba.
Kamasha truck drivers refused to enter South Sudan for more than 2 weeks, citing repeated killings and highway robberies along the Juba-Nimule Road. Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Deng Daudeng says the government has sent a formal letter to truck drivers, assuring them that the government has deployed security forces to escort the drivers to and from Juba. Deng says government officials held meetings to address the complaints of the truck drivers and come up with a solution.
Our discussion has been very clear that the government has fully deployed the unit that will provide escort from Nimule to Juba. And all other matters that were hindering the coming of the trucks are also considered by the government. And so the remaining part is with the drivers. But then, as we speak now, there are trucks from Uganda are coming. Normally, are coming to Juba. So the road is not closed. The road is moving. It is only few drivers who have blocked others not to come.
Deng says the truck drivers said they wanted a joint effort of security forces from the East African countries. But he says the government disagreed on that because South Sudan is a sovereign country that is capable of providing protection on all the routes in and out of the country. The Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister says truck drivers also asked that South Sudan government compensate families of the two drivers killed on the Juba-Nimle Road, but the government did not agree to that request.
We said no, we cannot do that because the people that are taking life of people are people who are outlaws and rebels, and we cannot, even the government, we have lost some of our citizens that have been using this particular road. So the mandate of the government is to secure, provide absolute security on the way. That's the most important that the government have done as we speak now.
Deng says the government signed a cessation of hostilities agreement with rebel groups and that the government is adhering to the agreement. But some holdout groups are intentionally attacking trucks and killing innocent people to tarnish the government's image. Responding to reports that the government has set up several checkpoints along the road and that soldiers are extorting money from the truck drivers, Deng said security forces removed all illegal checkpoints along the Juba-Nimle Road 3 days ago. Now he says there is only a stop in Nimule and a checkpoint in the city where officials check for illegal goods. Deng says the government has initiated escort directives which all drivers should follow.
The directive are that if they come to Nimule, they will be put in a group of 10 or 15 trucks so that they have a lead escort and then escort from behind. And we advise them that timing should also be known. You know, they should be moving at daytime by 5 or 6 o'clock. They should not be moving so that we have a clear system of providing escort.
Deng says the government will review the measures every 2 weeks with their customs counterparts in Uganda and the security sector in South Sudan to prevent further attacks along the Juba-Nimle Road. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, the UN promises to help Sudan implement the Juba Peace Agreement. Find out how after this break.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. And in our Tuesday health segment, we look at COVID-19 quarantine protocols around the world. A fleet of camper van is now providing emergency quarantine facilities in remote outback town in Australia, where over 10% of mostly indigenous population is infected with the coronavirus. A lack of accommodation for COVID-19 patients and their close contacts in Wilcannia, 1,000 kilometers northwest of Sydney, has highlighted a chronic housing problem in many First Nation communities. From Sydney, Phil Massa reports.
Wilcannia has one of the highest rates of COVID-19 transmission in the Australian state of New South Wales. More than 13% of the town of 800 people have contracted the contagious disease. About 60% of the population is indigenous. 30 camper vans will provide temporary accommodation for the close contacts of infected patients. Officials had raised concerns about Aboriginal residents' ability to safely isolate themselves in overcrowded homes from family members who've tested positive for COVID-19. Providing adequate and affordable housing is part of the government's long-term strategy to improve Indigenous health and well-being. But Dr. Jason Agostino, a senior medical advisor to the National Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation, told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that much more needs to be done.
What is happening in Wilcannia and in Western New South Wales is because of a lack of investment in appropriate housing for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people over decades. You know, we saw the swine flu pandemic particularly impact Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people back in 2009. And it is poor housing that is at the heart of rheumatic heart disease across Australia. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have some of the highest rates of rheumatic heart disease in the world, and it's completely unacceptable. And at the heart of that is this poor housing.
Charities have said the Delta variant of COVID-19 has caused a humanitarian crisis in Wilcannia's Aboriginal community. Members already suffer from many chronic illnesses, including diabetes and heart disease. Australian Indigenous leaders have insisted the government's regional response to the pandemic has been ill-prepared and slow. The military has been sent to the region to help, along with fire service volunteers and Australia's Royal Flying Doctor Service. Also, the first shipments of 4 million Pfizer vaccine doses arrived in Sydney Sunday from Britain under a drug exchange deal to boost Australia's inoculation drive. About 38% of eligible Australians are fully vaccinated. More than half of the population remains in lockdown, including residents in Sydney, Melbourne and Canberra, as Delta variant cases continue to increase. Authorities say restrictions will begin to be relaxed gradually when more than 70% of Australians were fully inoculated. Authorities have recorded about 62,000 coronavirus cases and more than 1,000 fatalities in Australia since the pandemic began. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The head of the United Nations Integrated Transition Assistance in Sudan has expressed readiness to offer technical support for the implementation of the Juba Peace Agreement. Volker Perthes says lasting peace and reconciliation are among the objectives of the mission during the transitional period in Sudan. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Speaking during a consultative meeting of the Joint Military High Committee in Khartoum that brought together officials from parties in the transitional government, Perthes reiterated the UN's call on the government and armed groups to fully implement the Juba peace deal and prepare for the safe return of refugees and internally displaced persons. Perthes praised both sides for jointly forming a committee tasked with monitoring a permanent ceasefire under the security arrangements provision of the Juba peace deal. But the UN official says he remains concerned about the continued violence in many parts of Darfur, describing the situation there as fragile and requiring more effort to realize stability in the region. He expressed the UN mission's commitment to give technical support to the two parties so that joint forces can be deployed in the region as soon as possible.
I know that you're full of hope and capability, which has been shown during the Sudanese December Revolution, that inspired many young people beside the Juba Peace Agreement. UNITAMS remains committed and ready to support this Sudanese vision.
Perthes vows to work with all concerned parties to achieve stability and protect civilians and to be involved in all activities of the Sudanese people, especially women, so that they can play an active role in laying the foundations of security and stability in Sudan. Speaking at the same event, Major General Salahuddin Merghani, chairman of Sudan's Joint Military High Committee, which is monitoring the ceasefire, says a lack of funds has delayed the deployment of joint forces in Darfur region, but he expressed the readiness of Sudanese government's forces to be deployed, saying any possible technical support would be an advantage.
We are in high readiness to move on and be deployed anywhere, anytime, taking wise advices and lessons learned and also I am sure that our elements are hopeful to gain experiences and skills, because they know well that the nationals, locals, IDBs, refugees are eager to get back home safely, move free and feel stable, secured, doing normal activities.
Suleiman Sandal, deputy head of the Joint Committee who represents the armed forces, says technical support is crucial. He says the full implementation of the Juba peace deal remains the only way to achieve stability in the region.
There are clear articles which speak of the importance of seeking technical and financial support, and I believe they play a major role in this regard.
Nimir Abdulrahman, the governor of North Darfur, says the deployment of joint forces will help the region realize economic development. He called on UNITAMS and other friends of Sudan to continue offering them support in order to fully implement the Juba peace agreement.
The full implementation of the security arrangements, especially in Darfur, will create a conducive environment that provides a secure environment where peace and stability prevail. This will help us as governors in the region in expanding development.
The agreement stipulates that 12,000 joint forces be deployed in Darfur to help maintain security and allow refugees and IDPs to return in their villages. Repeated intercommunal clashes have occurred in many parts of the Darfur region ever since the UN and African Union ended their joint peacekeeping mission in December last year. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
We love to hear what you think about issues in our news. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202-630-8011. We reserve the rights to read your brief comments every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with Victoria Ole and the song Mama. Listening to Victoria Ole and the song Mama. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.